ladies and gentlemen, time lords and campers, we are back with another round of Oral Horror. In this corner, the show that asks the question, what if we had a time machine and didn't care about causality? Quantum Leap! And the challenger proving once and for all that 90s mullet kids are the absolute worst, salute your shorts! Hold on to your underpants, because this is Put Up Your Spoons!
This week's theme...
Put Up Your Spooks!
Gee, hey everybody!
Hi guys!
It's sure been a while. I know you missed us.
But... we are back this week, and we're throwing you some curveballs with Quantum Leap and Salute Your Shorts.
Quantum Leap. Now, this may interest you. A couple of months ago, I thought to myself, hey, I'm going to start watching Quantum Leap. It's a show that I watched during my childhood in the 90s.
I was a huge fan of Quantum Leap. But this was a late stage show. This was from season 5, the episode we're going to cover. And I remember the episode, but when we watched it for the show, I was surprised at the intro and the theme. I remember the British female who gives this very eloquent exposition at the top. And then the really cool theme song kicks in.
But it was a crappy version.
It was like a crappy version. It was like two different intros kind of spliced together. And so that kind of bumped me. And so I went to YouTube and I was looking for the intro that I remembered. And I found the season 1 intro, which is a really bad... echoey voiceover of Scott Bakula.
Oh, yeah.
Being like, huh. do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, because I just recently started watching Quantum Leap again.
It all started when a time travel experiment I was conducting went a little caca.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say. Like, I remembered loving Quantum Leap and it being so intense and like having a real passion for it. And then starting up with season 1 again within the last few months, being like, Jesus, this show is a lot goofier than I remember. And then when we went to do this episode, I thought, okay, well, maybe it got like better and like more serious in the later seasons. And I'm happy or unhappy to report, I was wrong. It stays just as goofy.
So in that really early like pilot episode introduction... it's clear that they'd only shot one or two episodes. This used to happen a lot where the opening credits sequence would just be footage of one or two episodes. And then as the seasons progress, the credit sequence gets better and better. And it's funny because season 1, it's like he's in a fighter jet and then he's like in a bar drinking. And then it's like stock photography of Jimi Hendrix and JFK. And then it's him in the fighter jet again. And it's like they're just like piecing this together out of the one or two episodes they've shot. By season 5, you're like, how long is this theme song? It's like 2 solid minutes of Scott Bakula fucking and fighting.
Well, so anyways, why don't you tell us about the spookiest episode of Quantum Leap?
This episode definitely puts up its spooks because Quantum Leap is a sci-fi show, and this show was about vampires. The episode begins, as always, with Sam leaping into a new body. This time, he wakes up in a coffin in a castle during an epic lightning storm. And he usually checks a mirror first thing to get a sense of who he is, what body he's jumped into, but he can't find a mirror anywhere. It turns out that he is Lord Corrington, an eccentric artist who is rumored to be related to a vampire. Just then, a creepy manservant and a curly blonde waif come in and try to get him ready for the big ceremony. It is the night of the blood moon. Sam's holographic friend from the future, Al, pops in and starts freaking out. Sam is dressed all gothic and he's in a creepy castle, and it's not even suckhead season.
I think you've leaped into a... A what? A vampire.
A vampire?
I know it sounds strange, but you should see the guy in the waiting room. He looks like a cross between Bela Lugosi and a sick corpse.
Apparently the real Nigel, who is in the waiting room back in the future, is all creepy and vampire-like. Sam tells Al to knock it off with the vampire nonsense and is like, come on, come on, come on. Give me the exposition dump. But for the first time, it turns out that Sam has leapt into a body outside of America. So that's another weird thing. Apparently, Sam only leaps around in American history. And now he's in Europe, which is weird because he could only like leap around in his own lifetime. And now he's leaping into a body that's outside of his lifetime and outside of the country. To make matters worse, the Europeans use different computer file formats, and so they can't dig up the information they need. And that's just, it's just great. Sam and the Waif go downstairs to meet their guests, a couple of Euro vampire-looking aristocrats, Victor Drake and Claudia. They are super pumped for the Blood Moon ceremony, and they are really horned up at the sight of this Waif. Victor Drake presents him with a gift. A silver dagger. Finally, Al pops back in for the info dump. He says that Sam is probably there to prevent the murder of the Waif. According to the records, she will be found dead in 3 days, drained of blood, killed by a silver dagger. Dun dun dun. Sam decides to shut down the idea that he's some kind of reincarnation of this Count Bathory by heading to the cemetery to find Count Bathory's bones. But just when they're down there in the creepy cemetery about to open the coffin, they are interrupted by a shrill scream. They run upstairs and they find the Waif weeping over the body of the castle guard dog. And it's just like Ryan once said, you know you've got some villains when there's dogs a-killins. So Victor Drake wanders in, licking dog blood off his lips, and he's all like, what happened? Sam is furious. He cancels the Blood Moon ceremony, and Victor Drake is like, blah, how about a toast? And Sam's like, all right, gluck, gluck, gluck. And then he and the Waif are like, oh, we got drugged. So they're roofied. They pass out. Sam wakes up tied to a table. And tied is sort of very in the loosest definition. I don't know if you noticed that there's just like a loop of rope around his wrists.
I didn't notice.
Basically, if he moved his wrists in a counterclockwise circle, he would be untied. It's like the laziest rope tying. You know, I'm no bondage expert, but... you know, so Sam pleads with this chick, Claudia, to stop all the vampire BS and let him free. But instead, she vamps out, pops fangs, and tries to sink her teeth into his neck. Clong, she gets KO'd by the manservant. So Sam runs up to the roof where Victor Drake is about to sacrifice his wife and resurrect this vampire lord or some shit.
It's just as it was in the beginning when Bathory ruled the night.
I've awaited this moment my entire life to bridge the gap between the living and the dead, to fly with fallen angels and to soar into the night, and you, oh, you shall be my wings.
Just then, as Victor Drake lifts the silver dagger high to enact the sacrifice, he is struck by the nonstop lightning storm and killed. At the very end, Sam is chuckling at Al for believing in all this vampire nonsense, and he decides to pick up a silver plate and finally check his reflection, and he sees that there is none. The end.
I was like, oh man, this is going to be great. He's going to look into the mirror at the beginning of the episode, and he's not going to have a reflection. But then immediately Al was like, there's no mirrors around, Sam. And I was like, oh, right, of course. They can't, like, give away the trick by having a mirror, because if he sees his reflection in a mirror, then you know he's not a real vampire. And if he doesn't see his reflection in the mirror, then you do know he's a real vampire, but that doesn't make any sense, so they had to hold it to the very end.
They sort of keep the suspense going, and then in the end, they come down on the side of, no, he's an actual vampire, which doesn't make a lot of sense, because he's an artist who's supposed to be a reincarnation of this guy, Count Bathory.
I mean, I guess he is Count Bathory, just Highlander style, rewriting his own history over and over again.
I guess he is, because
the painting looked just like him.
The whole Blood Moon ceremony was supposed to be a sacrifice to Count Bathory, who was walled up in the castle 300 years ago. But anyway, vampires are real. They're yeah. part of the Quantum Leap universe, which means that as he leaps from life to life, decade to decade, there's just like vampires in the background operating. There are also extraterrestrials in the Quantum Leap universe. But also, you know, the thing that is forcing Sam to jump from life to life, righting all these wrongs, might be God?
In one of the very early episodes, like 1, 2, or 3, Ziggy isn't able to pull Sam out. And Ziggy, the computer, like goes and sulks in the corner and won't talk to Al, because he doesn't know what's going on and he can't figure it out. It's possible I'm remembering that incorrectly, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. So yeah, you might be right. There may be some outside quantum forces. But my question is this. If they 100% figured out that guy was a real vampire, shouldn't someone have gone and, like, tried to destroy him somehow? Once Sam jumps out, like, sure, he saved that one lady and sent her away, but that vampire's just gonna find someone else to go sacrifice at the next Blood Moon. He's still out there.
I don't know if the vampire needs to enact these Blood Moon ceremonies.
But he did. Oh, unless the whole idea was that those other two, like, tricked him into it somehow.
Well, I don't know what the point was, because...
But he also married a homeless lady.
He married a homeless lady so that he could sacrifice her.
Because he's an evil vampire.
She thought she was going to be, like, turned into a vampire... But also this sacrifice was supposed to somehow appease or strengthen the vanquished vampire, but it turns out he was the real vampire all along, so I don't know who they were sacrificing to or what the point was. But speaking of it being better than you remembered, I think when I saw this show back in the day, when I was a vampire-obsessed lad... It was like I caught part of it, like, as dinner was coming on, and then, like, I had to turn it off, and, like, mm-hmm. I ran back, or, like, someone was flipping through the channels, and I was like, oh, my God, there's vampires on Quantum Leap. I can't believe this. I have to watch this. And, like, I vividly remember one or two scenes from that episode, but I also remember, like, not being able to see the whole thing. So in my mind, it has existed ever since then as like this incredible episode of Quantum Leap, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden it was open season on all sockheads.
Open season 5, where they ran out of ideas and the ratings were slipping.
Back when the world was magical and you could be watching a sci-fi show and all of a sudden vampires would pop up on it. Going back and looking, you know, going back and watching that episode, like, woof, it was boring as hell.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It was so dull. The characters were so bad. I mean, Ian Buchanan
and Al is upsetting,
crushing it as Victor Drake. He was fantastic. I remember him from General Hospital. He was great.
Oh, weird. I don't remember.
Yeah, he was a soap opera character back in the day. Just a great, smarmy, European rogue.
One good thing that I've learned, though, is like, because when I watched it back in the day, I don't think I ever watched them in order. And so I had always wondered all this time whether the button on the end was just a silly little button, or whether it actually set up the next episode. And I finally found out this year that it did set up the next episode, so there's a mystery put to rest.
Have you looked in a mirror yet?
My, oh my. So this whole damn thing started when Jeff sent me an email that said, "Hey, want to do this episode of Salute Your Shorts, where they tell a spooky ghost story about Zeke the plumber?" And I said, "Sure." And Jeff said, "Oh." And I said, "I'm sorry, no, I really do. That sounds like a wonderful idea." So it's like the second episode of Salute Your Shorts. Now, of course, Salute Your Shorts is a show, a Nickelodeon show from the 90s that I watched and loved as a child. Not known for its horror, not really known for its anthology-ness, but it's one of those shows, like, I didn't have cable until I was 10 or 11, but my grandpa did have cable, so when we'd go to his house in the summer, it was all about Salute Your Shorts and Hey Dude, and What Wild and Crazy Kids, and you can't do that on television. But Salute Your Shorts takes place in a summer camp. The name comes from hoisting underpants up on the flagpole. The episode starts with this kid, Sponge, who's the camp nerd. The summer camp nerd Sponge is filming, and he films the camp bully, Budnick, who you, Jeff, probably remember as the kid from T2. But when I saw T2, I remembered him as the kid from Salute Your Shorts.
Who was he in T2?
Your step-parents are kind of dicks, huh? He's like John Connor's buddy, redheaded mullet buddy.
You know, he rang a bell, but I couldn't place him.
Well, next time you watch T2, you'll be like all excitable.
Hell yeah.
So Budnick is carving Ugly Sucks or whatever into a tree, and Ugly is the camp counselor, the only camp counselor in the entire summer camp, who the kids are always giving the business to. And Ug catches him and is like, "I'm going to get you, Budnick." And Budnick says, "Hey, you don't have any proof," but he tries to get the camera, and that's the end of that scene, cold open. But it sets up the fact that Ug really hates Budnick and vice versa. So immediately thereafter, the campers have two choices. They can go listen to a scary story, or they can go play bingo. And everyone that we care about, our heroes, decide to go listen to Budnick's scary story. So he tells them the story, including Ug, of Zeke the plumber, who was a janitor at the camp who got his nose bitten off in the war by a parrot in the Philippines, which I thought was a lovely little touch. So he couldn't smell the poo that he had to clean up at the camp, nor could he smell it when he hit a gas main and exploded himself to smithereens. So everyone's really scared by the story, and they all go to bed, and then Zeke the plumber visits another camper, Michael, in his dreams, because somebody mentions that he's like maybe a Freddy Krueger type of a character, and Zeke the plumber is like, "Hello, I'm Zeke the plumber," and Michael's like, "Oh, you're Zeke the plumber, huh? Okay then."
Zeke the plumber?
No reaction whatsoever. I guess he knows he's dreaming or something. But Zeke the plumber reveals a very embarrassing secret about Michael, that he carries a stuffed animal with him to camp, and that he sucks his thumb.
There's a couple secrets that Zeke is sort of shaming the kid for, and then he's like, "And I'm going to find out more secrets too, like this and this." And the kid's like, "How'd you know about that?" He's like, "I got it from your head."
"Come on, let's see what else you have inside your head."
No! No!
And then he wakes up, and then Budnick is right there, and he's like, "You suck. I heard you whining about your stuffed animal." Then over in the other cabin, in the girls' cabin, Telly, the tomboy of the group, gets visited by Zeke in her dreams, and it looks exactly the same somehow, so he must be a real supernatural entity. And she's like, "Well,
what I really want to do is play professional ball."
"Your wish is my command."
So he takes her to the gym and dresses her up in a fancy dress and says, "This is a ball, you suck." And then she's like, "No, not this kind of ball. I'm a tomboy." And then the next day, Budnick gives Telly crap because I guess she told everybody. I don't know. Although, I guess there is a fun ritual where all the girls are spooked out and they dump toothpaste all around their place because toothpaste can ward off dream demons.
According to this book that the girl has.
And actually, there's a pretty ripping piece of dialogue where she says,
"But it's something 4 out of 5 doctors recommend."
"Which doctors?"
"Exactly. Which doctors from the island of Lumbago?"
Which is the disease that the Stooges are always trying to cure. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, that was definitely a bit of
crackling.
Nerdy crackling, nerdy screenwriter comedy.
So Budnick is just giving them no end of shit, and so they challenge him to spend an entire night on the spot where Zeke the plumber blew up, and he says if he can do it, then Telly has to wear a dress, and Michael has to suck his stuffed animal's thumb or something.
And tell everyone what a wuss he is.
Yeah, I forget already what they said Budnick had to do if he lost, probably.
He had to stand up and tell everyone he was a wuss, I think.
Definitely the worst fate for a camper in the 90s. So Budnick gets his lawn chair, he gets all his provisions that they've given to him to spend all night out in the woods.
So Budnick is like, I need potato chips, and they've got to be Ruffles, and I want coolers full of ice and soda, and I need this, and I need that. And he's got this like ridiculous list of very specific demands, and it's like, oh, he's really milking this. You know, all the campers are like united to sort of team up and try to force him into this humiliating dare. And so they're actually acquiescing to all of his ridiculous demands. And so it seems like he's getting one over on them by
he's
getting all this soda and chips and this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. So they're all plotting about how to get him, and they put a big pumpkin mask on the sad to say camp heavy set gentleman. Donkey Lips, and I don't know, he runs off into the night, and then Ugg is there and he wants a piece, so they all go out, and meanwhile Budnick is using all those provisions to set up a bunch of kid traps. So he like shakes up the soda cans and sets them up like mortars, even though they wouldn't stay shook up, but you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, he made race car noises when he was shaking them up, so maybe that's like, if anyone knows how to shake up a soda and keep it shook, it's Budnick. Budnick.
Yeah, and he fills the cooler with rocks and does something with that, and sets a bunch of other traps.
Setting trip
wires. Like very elaborate and traps. And then he just...
making alarm systems out of potato chips.
Sits back to wait. Oh, is it they were ruffled because they're extra crunchy?
Yep.
Yeah. That's pretty brilliant. Except that he didn't end up getting ruffled chips, so maybe that was his downfall. So the kids are trying one by one to spook him, but they're getting sprayed by soda. They're getting faked out by a dummy version of Budnick with a melon head that just like falls off, and just failing at every turn because he's anticipated their every move. And then he jumps out and tells them how much they suck and how they could never ever spook him.
It is pretty great. He's like, I'll never get scared, never.
I'm the master of the universe. Nobody can scare me.
At some point in the episode, he, like when they're challenging him, he's like, "I'll show you." Ha, 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 ha.
A Zeke the plumber is some kind of dream demon, a la Freddy. Budnick's laughter is pure Robert Englund, like Freddy's nightmare, forced mirthless laughter.
So he's really beat them at their own game. But then suddenly Zeke the plumber jumps out from the underbrush and he's like, "No, don't take my head!" And then
Zeke the plumber starts chasing
Zeke the
him
plumber
through
chases
the
him through the forest. But it was all part of the trick. And he's like, "I knew I had you the second you said you could smell my fear, because Zeke the plumber has no nose. It was bitten off by a parrot in the Philippines, fool." So he springs another trap on Zeke the plumber and hangs him upside down by a rope, which is counterweighted by the cooler full of rocks. And he rips the mask off, and it's Ugly the counselor. And then he says, "I gotta go get a knife to cut you down, Ugg." So he goes off to get a knife. And the only thing he's revealed that he's afraid of in the episode is spiders. And wouldn't you know it, he runs through a gigantic arachnophobia array of spider's webs. At least, I think that's what it was.
Budnick is screaming like, "Help, somebody help. I'll be your slave forever if you just come and help me. I'm scared.
I can't possibly keep moving."
And so the campers eventually come up and free him from these spider webs and agree to accept him into a lifetime of
servitude and humiliation.
Servitude.
Oh, these were like Shelob webs. They stuck him fast.
But one of the kid is like holding like a giant yard of sort of cottony fabric.
And they did set up the webs.
Like fake webs, but they didn't do a good job of establishing that.
Mm.
And the webs didn't even look that extreme. I mean, it looked like he just walked into like a small web. So it's very strange.
Oh, he also realizes the life lesson that he's alienated everyone, so he has no friends to help him. And those are his literal words. So yeah, what matters is not that they whether or not they set up the spider webs. What really matters is that the bully gets tortured. And so they wander off to go back to Dreamland, and we cut to Ugg the next day, still hanging upside down. Should be dead by now, probably. Or at least have his leg dismembered. I don't know how long you can hang upside down before you at least pass out.
Yeah, it's got to be bad for your health.
But Ugg is pretty thick-headed, so. Anyway, he gets his little button terror when Pumpkinhead Donkey Lips zombies out from the shadows, the daylight shadows, and gives him a good scare. The end.
What's great about that episode of Salute Your Shorts is that it was a strong horror-themed episode, and that was the second episode.
Yeah, they
the
jumped
right in. The second episode of the series swerved into horror and then was never horror again.
I do suppose that when you're like, okay, I'm going to do a show about a summer camp, what do you do at summer camp? Well, one of the main things is you tell scary stories.
Hand jobs.
So.
Oh.
I never went to summer camp, so this is why I'm such a late bloomer.
So Salute Your Shorts is terrible.
Oh, yeah. Not a great show.
It was very unpleasant to watch. It was actually uncomfortable to watch. Like, I'm an adult. I should not be watching this. Like,
you have to make it through to the Pinsky years, and then it's all good.
But I will say that I understand why people remember the Zeke the Plumber scenes, because 99% of this episode is just campers acting badly, but the few moments we get of the dream demon Zeke the Plumber, actually pretty creepy.
Yeah, it was a good mask.
It just his whole thing about how he used his plunger to suck like shame and secrets out of your brain to torture you.
Oh yeah, and also you know there's poo on that plunger.
Oh, for sure.
So you're coming out of it with pink eye at the very least.
But the smell didn't bother him because Zeke didn't have a nose.
So for Quantum Leap, time to shrew, not applicable. For Salute Your Shorts, is there a kryptonite in there?
Well, the kryptonite is spiders, and it is introduced right in the beginning of the episode.
You're right. Body count for Quantum Leap, we've got one dog. Body count for Salute Your Shorts, Zeke?
Zeke, but he technically died off screen, yeah.
Scare factor for Quantum Leap, it may be scary by 80s sitcom standards, scary by Quantum Leap standards. I mean, it was certainly...
not scary.
Not scary, but there were vampires with fangs. Scare factor for Salute Your Shorts, Zeke the Plumber.
Seems like it made you pee your shorts.
I did not salute my shorts. Yeah, I'll give it up for Zeke. I would say scare factor medium for Zeke the Plumber. Gross factor, Quantum Leap, zero. I would say all of Salute Your Shorts made me feel kind of gross. It was just low budget and poorly acted, badly written.
Only one adult to watch all those kids.
It was just unsettling. All right, theme of put up your spooks. I would say very high for Quantum Leap.
And very high for underpants.
Vampires.
I mean, salute your shorts.
We'll call that a tie. Totally 80s. I'm going to say that Quantum Leap was rocking the sexy Euro trash vampires and not the wimpy emo vampires.
I don't know. I'll just let you have it. I'm just going to give you like a blanket totally 80s from now on. Because you're gonna scratch for it no matter what.
I mean, that read 80s to me. I mean, it was set in 75, but it had sexy vampires. I mean, look, the 80s is a vibe. It's a feeling. you don't remember it as well.
There was
it wasn't as formative for you as it was for me. What the factor?
I mean, just the fact that vampires exist, I guess, is pretty what the factor. But it's not as if we didn't see it coming.
True. We knew it was vampires, but then the fact that, like, he was a guy, but maybe he was a vampire, but they were doing a ritual to this vampire, but he was that vampire. But you, yeah, I mean, you raise a very good point, which is, it's true, they know that vampires are real, but he leaps out of that body, so there's nothing they can do about the people in 1975. But if Count Bathory is still living for hundreds of years, that means that by the time of the Quantum Leap future that Al exists in, which is 1999, by the way, he should be able to call the police and be like, hello, police, I need to report a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know exactly where he is.
Or like, hey, these disappearances.
Need to call Rupert Van Helsing.
Hello, Scotland Yard.
What the factor for Salute Your Shorts? Zeke the Plumber's origin was very strange, uh-huh. But the rest of it was pretty on the nose.
Yeah.
So to speak.
But I mean, the whole thing is kind of a what the factor in that it inspired you to get in touch with me and say, why don't we do this weird thing that has no business on Put Up Your Spooks?
Well, I saw an article about this weird 90s Nickelodeon show that had like a legendarily creepy figure on it. And I was like, I bet Ryan watched this horrible show about campers on Nickelodeon.
Sure did. You bet correctly, sir. What was the over-under? You could buy a house. Actually, no, that's probably a low odds bet.
Okay, lesson learned. For Quantum Leap, the lesson is check your reflection first.
Murder is bad.
Is that the lesson for Salute Your Shorts?
No, I'm still talking about Quantum Leap. And believe Al when he gets creeped out. Just believe Al at all times.
That's fair.
There was a genuine lesson they tried to imply in Salute Your Shorts, which was like, don't be a dick to your friends. You gotta have friends. Friends are forever. Friends are always true.
All right, let's try to make sense of these ratings. You know, the fact that Salute Your Shorts has kryptonite, I don't know if that is a plus. It's more of just sort of something we track.
It's a score. It's 1 point on the board.
Is it a point?
Of course it is.
Okay, fine. It's a point that there was time.
It's just
to
like
kryptonite.
A hash mark.
Body count goes to Quantum Leap for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Scare factor goes to Salute Your Shorts for Zeke the Plumber. Gross factor is a wash. Theme is a wash. Totally 80s. I permanently get a point there, so I guess I can't complain. So I think it comes down to what the factor. I don't know. For me, Quantum Leap was so arduous and strange and nonsensical. It had a pretty heavy what the factor, whereas as awful as Salute Your Shorts is, it was very clear.
I think it's a tie. I guess it's a tie.
So for this episode of Put Up Your Spooks, both these episodes put up their spooks. Double knockout.
Did you ever go to summer camp?
No. The one time that I was supposed to go to summer camp, the age at which all the kids in my town went to summer camp, instead, I had to travel to my brother's college graduation.
Oh, man.
So while I had a great time and actually attended my first fraternity party and got wasted.
At summer camp age?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
And there are photos. I don't think I can access them to post them. But trust me, there are photos of me standing on a railing dancing in front of a keg. And I'm in, like, sixth grade, I think.
Yikes.
But 80s, baby. I never got to go to summer camp, which was funny because there was a summer camp up the street from my house. It was Camp Laurelwood. And it was sort of on the route. It was, like, within a mile of my house. So when my friends would come over, we would just walk through the woods to Camp Laurelwood. And it was closed most of the year, and we could wander around. So not only was it like an awesome, creepy, fun place to like hang out, we found two swords in the ground there.
What?
Two fencing foils. buried in the ground there. One time there was a beer ball floating in the estuary and back. Do you know what a beer ball is?
Is it a basketball with a beer logo on it?
I felt like I just accepted this as a thing that existed back then, but I've never heard of it, seen it, or thought of it since. It was basically like a giant, overpressurized, inflatable plastic orb that was full of beer. It was like a keg, but in like an inflatable form.
Odd.
And it was a thing, and one of these was just floating in this, you know, like a proper summer camp. There was like a really scummy pond that actually had like a waterfall that ran through this like weird concrete. I mean, it was like a sump pump, but it looked like it should have been a hydroelectric dam. It was weird back there, and it was an awesome place to hang out. And there was this beer ball floating around on the surface of this pond teenagers had had some kind of party. And so my friends and I were just throwing rocks at it because what else are you going to do? But this thing was pressurized, full of a carbonated beverage, and had been like baking in the sun for days. And so we were like throwing rocks at it. And then one of my friends chucked a rock and punctured this thing, and it fucking exploded. And it was so loud. It was this huge, ear-shattering explosion. And then the entire surface of the pond was covered in beer foam. And we lost our goddamn minds. It was fantastic. I was having flashbacks from the fraternity party I went to in sixth grade.
Still potent. I never went to summer camp either. I regret not having gone to summer camp. But I also know that I was a shy kid prone to homesickness, so I probably wouldn't have had a good time anyway. But I also had a summer camp right near my house, but it was only a day camp, so it wouldn't have been like, I wouldn't have gotten the full summer camp experience with the hand jobs and everything. But that summer camp is also where I did Trails of Terror.
Oh, nice.
So I kind of got a summer camp experience in the Put Up Your Spooks vein by going to that summer camp only on Halloween during the nighttime and dressing like a monster and scaring people.
I mean, which that sounds like really, the best of all possible worlds, give or take a hand job.
What else are dreams made of besides Zeke's?
Sweet dreams.
So, Jeff, what are you going to do if you see a Dracula or a plumber in your dreams?
I'm going to say, forget the Bacula and get with Dracula.
Better yet, what will you tell people if they see a Dracula or a plumber in their dreams?
Rerun for your life!
Thank you.